This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll welcome in two guests from different political perspectives to discuss the top stories in state and national politics this week. A lot of it dominated by a very rocky week for Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. Donald Trump is going to be in Green Bay today, but a number of prominent Wisconsin Republicans are skipping that rally. We'll start with that, and then we'll go on, and we will welcome your reactions. We'll welcome your thoughts on the top stories of the week. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Margaret Farrow, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin and a former state lawmaker. She is a member of the UW System Board of Regents. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for joining us. Also with us in studio is Joe Winicky, a former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Joe.
Margaret and I come from a time in the legislature where we disagreed vehemently, but we still all got along. I wish we went back to those days.
Yeah. We had respect, Joe.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, well, and that's why we have you on the Week in Review. let's talk about, first, the Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump and his running mate Mike Pence are going to hold a rally in Green Bay tonight. After a week that was filled with controversies, a number of state Republicans are skipping the event, including Governor Scott Walker, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Senator Ron Johnson. Margaret Farrow, starting with you, why do you suppose none of these Republicans want to join Donald Trump at this rally?
Well, I guess not to give the press more fodder because they love it, but I would say it goes back to what Governor Dreyfus used to say, and that was, when you've made a commitment, keep that commitment, no matter what else comes in the door, no matter what other invitation comes along. And these campaign stops are going to be very quickly planned, very quickly put out for information, and I think legitimately they have other things to do, and I respect them, especially Paul Ryan, who is stressed over and over that his district is the most important thing next to his family, probably, and that's what he's doing.
And what do you think, Joe?
Well, I don't think Paul Ryan's in trouble, but he does have a primary next Tuesday. Why on God's earth would he be in Green Bay?
Especially with Donald Trump not endorsing him.
Well, you know, to me, that's tit for tat. Paul Ryan did the dance for, almost a month about, I'm not quite there yet. And I thought Trump, who has had a pretty horrible week, had a pretty good catchphrase on that when he said, "I'm not quite there yet." He used Paul Ryan's exact words.
Yeah. So, Margaret Farrell, you think that this is because Republicans had prior commitments, not because Donald Trump is alienating some Republicans?
Well, I think at the point that all of them are at, if they're that thin-skinned, you know, they wouldn't be running again. They wouldn't be involved. I think, first of all, has Paul Ryan asked Donald Trump to endorse him? I don't think so. I haven't heard any request. I haven't heard any request talked about. He is running his own strong race. Joe's right. He has a primary. It's a contrived primary, but he pays attention to his constituents. And I say the same for the other two.
Yeah, and in Paul Ryan's case, if you're a Republican, and I don't pretend to speak for them, but there's a good near half of the Republican base right now that is kind of they got Trump the nomination. And they believe in this anti-establishment, let's throw everybody out. Paul Ryan, for better or worse, is the epitome of the establishment. And, you know, he has to tread this a little carefully just because, I mean, Paul Ryan's going to win. But what if he only gets 60% of the vote in a primary? It kind of sends a message that there's a real angry part of the Republican base. And, you know, he has to walk those hot coals carefully.
Yeah. And why do you say it's a contrived primary, Margaret?
Well, because I think if you look at the candidate that's there, he has very, very shallow roots, if any, in Wisconsin. His backing comes from a group that, for one reason or another, are upset with Paul Ryan. And they put their heads together and decided to find a candidate and have him run against Paul Ryan. For whatever reason, as Joe just said, to have numbers look different, to weaken him a little bit. But I never count an election over till it's over, so I'm counting on Paul to win, but I'll wait till morning. I guess next Wednesday morning.
Yeah, and I suspect it'll be over fairly early Tuesday night. But you know, what are we going to probably have a 9% turnout or something like that?
And that's too bad.
Yeah, it is.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about the primary a little bit later. But what and why do you suppose Margaret Farrow, though, Donald Trump and Mike Pence are going to Green Bay today?
Well, I'm surprised it's taken them this long, quite frankly, because for the last year we've been hearing that there are several bellwether counties in the country that are the ones to watch, the ones that will tell us what's going to happen. And from the beginning, Brown County, where Green Bay is, has been one of those counties. And so they want those numbers to look good in those counties, and they want to be strong in those counties. So I'm not surprised at all when we heard that that's where they were going to be.
Margaret's right about that. You got to remember, Hillary Clinton's first event with Barack Obama was going to be in Green Bay, and then there was, turmoil in the world, and they had to back off on it. But it's not just Brown County. Margaret's right about that, but it's also Outagamie, Sheboygan, Manitowoc. There's a bunch of bellwether counties that are in that Green Bay media market. So it's logical that candidates from both parties go to Green Bay regularly. What I don't quite get is why they've had to send Mike Pence right away to Waukesha. Cripes, if you don't have the wow counties, you're already doomed.
Well, he was loved there.
He was loved there.
All 400 of them, Margaret.
I got to meet him that day.
Did you? Sure he's a nice man.
I really think he's a true Midwesterner, and I like his style and his honesty.
He's got classy white hair.
So, thank you.
that's right. You do, too. Let's talk a little bit, though, about what Donald Trump has to do to not only win over Green Bay, but win Wisconsin when he didn't win during the primary. And there had been a Never Trump movement here. Do you think that's turning around, Margaret?
Well, I guess I don't want to. Who knows what's going to happen? People keep asking me, who are you going to vote for? What do you think is going to happen? And I said, there's still a lot of time. And by that, I mean there's so much that can happen on the world stage that will reflect on these two candidates, and people will see how they react. The economy certainly is just dragging its heels. It doesn't want to get started at all. And I think there's just so much time to go yet. And I have always said there's a two-week rule in campaigns. That's when people really sit down, pay attention, and make up their minds. So I think we're going to have a lot of rhetoric. We're going to have a lot of press excitement because now, unfortunately, I think this is a media-run race. We've got 24/7 headline needs, and the press keeps trying to fill them. And I think it's going to be a very, very close race in the end, and of course, I hope it goes, our direction.
I am going to ask you, and you don't certainly have to answer, but we are hearing from some prominent Republicans this week, or at least high-profile Republicans, who are saying they are not going to vote for Donald Trump; they are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Is that the decision you're making right now?
No, I would never vote for Hillary Clinton. I certainly think the day is going to come when we have a woman president. She isn't my first choice, which shouldn't surprise anyone. I've told everyone who's asked me that I'm voting for the party, and I believe when November rolls around and we add it all up, I just hope that people see that our candidate and our side of the aisle is the better one to hang with unless we want to become a socialistic country, which is where we'll go.
Okay, I was okay with that until the last sentence, Margaret. Socialist?
Well, we turned down the socialist in Bernie, I guess. But Hillary's moved that way very, very far to get the nomination, and I don't know how far back she's going to walk, Joe.
Being a liberal does not make you a socialist. Like, I'm a liberal, but I also believe in capitalism. Does that make me a socialist? I guess not.
Well, I hope that's her feeling, but that's not what I'm hearing.
Well, for 25 years, the complaint on Hillary Clinton is she was too far in the middle.
Let me ask you, Joe, from a Democratic perspective, do you think this is a shoo-in for Hillary Clinton, or do you think that that Donald Trump might give her some business here?
Well, it's not a shoo-in. I mean, my God, it's August 5th. We're in the dog days of August. I mean, there's nobody. Well, if Donald Trump didn't keep putting his foot in his mouth about every 6 hours, I don't think anybody'd be paying attention right now. And it's the old tradition was, the presidential campaign really gets going on Labor Day. And there's some truth in that. The difference from that analogy to today, however, is that in those days, there truly were a lot of people that might lean Democrat or lean Republican or truly are independents. And I think Margaret would agree with me. Most people who say they're independent really lean one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And they would swing. And Wisconsin used to have the second highest percentage in the country of voters who would flip and occasionally vote, split ticket vote. And I just don't see that today. I think the cancerous state of the body politic in America, where Democrats seem to hate Republicans, Republicans hate Democrats. I really don't even like talking politics with people I know, especially if I know their politics anymore, because it's just going to turn into a knockout brawl, and it's no fun. I mean, my other complaint with too many people, and this is where I'm going to go off on my deep end, is I wish people would actually read things and learn about the candidates they support or oppose, because so often the stuff I hear is just BS. There's no fact to any of it.
Like what?
I mean, like who? What? Mm. I mean, it's so you talk to these guys and they come up with this stuff. I mean, classic is if I hear about Benghazi one more time, I could throw up.
Here's a comment from Brandy on Facebook who says, I don't understand Walker, Ryan, and Johnson. They endorse Trump, but they despise him. If they hadn't endorsed him, I'd applaud them for sticking to their guns. This is babyish. Margaret Furrow, what about President Obama this week said, hey, Republicans, you keep on walking back Trump's statements. You keep on disagreeing with the things that Trump is saying. You should pull your support. You should pull your endorsements. Should Republicans pull their endorsements of Donald Trump if he keeps on saying things like he's been saying?
No. And I think endorsements are way, way overblown in the order of their importance. I think it's kind of something the press waits with their pen in hand or their phone in hand to record. And I don't think, personally, I think not that every voter does their homework, and I agree with Joe. I wish people would get their facts and inform themselves. But I just don't think the endorsements are that important. It's a difference, I believe, in our candidates, and I mean this sincerely, and Joel will probably go off on the deep end again on me, but we deal with reality. We deal with the truth. And when I hear both Hillary Clinton and the president say what they say, looking bold-faced in the camera, and the world listening to it, who has paid any attention to facts, know they're lying or they're changing the facts enough to say it their way that isn't true, I just don't understand how people with an intelligent process in their head can listen to that.
Sure.
Do you have one example?
Yeah. When Hillary Clinton last Sunday on the trying to be ignored TV interview was asked about, I mean, the press is trying to ignore it, was asked about the
emails.
The Comey statement about her emails saying that, yes, she did transmit confidential emails. And she said, no, Comey supported her completely. Comey said everything was fine. And we all heard, I heard, Comey's testimony before the committee in the legislature saying that she had transmitted those. And she looked right at the camera and said it wasn't that way. And that's been the modus operandi of both Clintons, looking more so this one than Bill, looking at the camera and saying, no, black is white. Why do you say it's black? I don't understand that mentality.
I saw that interview, and I didn't see it at all the same way. So I guess it's a matter of where people's perspectives are. But, you know, when it comes down to it, something the president said, and I don't view, I mean, people can say a lot of things about Barack Obama, but liar isn't one of them. And I believe that what he said, some of these people should put party over country. He was talking about you can't keep condemning the man and then saying the party's more important than the future of our country. And I think that's what he was saying. I happen to agree with it.
Let me jump in.
By the way, I agree with for Democrats if they don't like their candidate.
We need to take our break, and then we will continue talking about the latest news and developments on the presidential campaign trail. And we'll welcome some calls. We have full lines right now, people wanting to chime in. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our Week in Review, where we are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics. Our guest today, Margaret Farrell, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, and Joe Winicky, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and a former state senator. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Let's go to the phones. We have lots of callers who want to weigh in. Don in Middleton is with us first. Hi, Don.
Hi. You mentioned Paul Ryan earlier and how he's probably going to win his primary. But he's clearly against the people of his district. You know his stance against Medicare and Social Security. It's outrageous. There's an open primary on August 9th, and Democrats in District 1 can vote out Paul Ryan by agreeing with one of his opponents. We can finally get rid of Paul Ryan. That would be wonderful.
Do you think Democrats are going to do that, Joe?
No. And, you know, for example, in Rock County, which is one of the population centers of Ryan's district, there's a couple of very important countywide primaries on the Democratic side. And I'm not convinced, as an old Democrat, I don't want people crossing over to do mischief. I want them to, I mean, there's some important races. There's some people challenging some incumbents over there. And I just don't like when people play mischief. Be who you are.
Yeah, let's go to Ricardo and Racine next. Hi, Ricardo.
Good morning. I think Paul Ryan is in trouble. A lot of people are remembering when Obama was being elected, Ryan met with a group in Washington, D.C. to vow to make him a one-termer and go against everything he's going for. And we're seeing that now. When Paul Ryan speaks, he continually talks about against the president. And I think not much has happened in Congress, and people are seeing that he really doesn't have a plan. He's against everything Obama does, and we want our representative to work with the president. I'm from Paul Ryan's district, and he's in deep trouble.
Yep. Margaret, what do you say to that?
Well, first of all, Paul Ryan has only been speaker for the tail end of this part of the session. He's inherited all the sins of the fathers, all those things ahead, both in the executive and in the legislative branch. I think there is certainly, you're hearing, Joy, why I said that I was concerned that Paul does win his election. I think if he were given the chance and through the process, as good as it is, and Joe and I know well what it means, you can have both houses controlled by the same party, and that doesn't mean everything is going through like, you know, grease lightning, because there are differences of opinion on both sides of in both houses, both in our state and on the federal level, much less when you're confronting the president. Now, Paul Ryan does disagree with the philosophy and the policies that the president has done, those he's already done, and those what he represents. But I think he will have, a strong showing at the end, and I hope he stays there. I think he's going to do a good job when it truly becomes his Congress, as Speaker.
Well, Speaker Ryan this week said it is distressing that the conversation is not focusing on Hillary Clinton and all of her deficiencies, his words. Margaret, are Republicans, or Trump for that matter, shooting themselves in the foot by not focusing in on Hillary Clinton?
I think there's no question that both sides ought to be looking at policy, not personalities, and stop name-calling. I think that we have a non-professional politician, which of course is what he wears as a badge of honor, running on our side, and he speaks his mind. Whatever comes along, he'll give you an answer. How many times has he let the press confront him with questions after questions? And sometimes they can pull out a headline-making comment out of that, and they just love it. On the other side, it's over 300 days since the Democratic candidate has confronted let the press confront her in an open setting with open questions. That tells me a lot about what they're both about.
Joe?
Well, every time Donald Trump opens his mouth, something strange comes out of it. Take this last week. Let's see. He attacked Gold Star families. He said he wasn't going to. He wasn't ready to endorse Paul Ryan. He wasn't going to support John McCain. There was another one he's against.
The President Obama's the worst president in history.
Worst president in history. Hillary Clinton is the devil. This all happened in the last 7 days, Margaret. Maybe he should quit having press conferences.
Well, but you know what, Joe? The people filling the auditoriums that are there to hear him agree with him.
Yes, but they were there for Joe McCarthy. They were there for Huey Long. They love demagogues. And this man is a demagogue. I mean, he likes to hear himself talk. And you know darn well, a full audience does not equate to voters. He's got the angry 30%. How does he get the other 70?
Well, I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more, Joe. But the issue, you know, the Gold Star family is something I think is an example of what the press can do in manipulating an item.
Let her say.
Because the Gold Star family attacked Donald Trump. That man was on the stage by design at the end of the Democratic convention on the night that they knew their audience would be the largest when Hillary was going to give her acceptance speech, and he called Donald Trump. I mean, he just ripped him up one side and down the other.
Yeah, he actually asked him if he had actually read the Constitution. That was the toughest line, he said.
Well, it was a clever line, and did he think he didn't? I mean, he went to school before they stopped teaching it, so he probably knows it. I mean, we know he knows it now. But the point is, you and I know when we get thick skin, we can let things roll off our back. He's still a beginner in this process, and he, by nature, doesn't let things roll off his back.
Do we want a beginner to be president?
We have one right now in Barack Obama.
Oh.
Let me just, I'm sure most people are aware of this, but the Gold Star parents appeared at the Democratic convention last week. The Khans, parents of an army soldier who is Muslim, who was killed in Iraq, scolding Trump, asking him if he's ever read the Constitution, also saying you can borrow my or I'll lend you my copy if you need one.
He also said something else that was very important. In Donald Trump's world, his son couldn't have been in the military because he couldn't have been in the country.
That is such a farce. Because
he's the one who says he wants to ban Muslims, Margaret.
He said he wants to vet them before he lets them in the country. Did you hear that part of the speech? No, you didn't. He said, I don't want to just let all these refugees in until we know who they are. He didn't say I want to throw
them. My God, Margaret, my Irish ancestors snuck in from Canada. You know, and remember back in the 50s when they came in, Irish need not apply?
Yeah. My Irish ancestors came in through Ellis Island.
Well, they didn't want to go through New York. But.
Well, how should Trump have handled this situation instead of going after the Khans?
Should have ignored it. You know, my sympathies are with any family that has lost a loved one sacrificed our country and left it there. You don't do that. You didn't see George Bush do something like this. And I wasn't a fan of George Bush's, but I knew he would never stoop to such a crazy level as that.
You know, is he right, Joe, right there, Margaret, that Trump should have just, thanked the Khans for their sacrifice?
Sure, he should have said, I just want to clarify something. You, your family came here as legal immigrants.
I don't think so, actually.
What I was referring to were the thousands of, 50,000 now that Hillary is saying she wants to have Muslim the refugees come in. He doesn't want to just open the doors and let them all come in until we know who they are and what their motives are.
Germany let in 800,000.
And they're paying for it.
You know, a vice presidential candidate, Mike Pence, has been trying to do some damage control. He said the Khan family should be cherished. He also wholeheartedly endorsed Paul Ryan in his race. Margaret,
and John McCain.
Yeah. So is Pence keeping the Trump campaign from imploding, Margaret?
I think I think he is saying what Donald probably means, but he says in a more bombastic way.
No offense to Tim Kaine and no offense to Mike Pence. Nobody votes for vice president.
I can speak to the second on the ticket and agree with you.
That's a good line.
Let's just talk, since we did mention Trump's visit to Green Bay tonight. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton's running mate Tim Kaine will be in Milwaukee this afternoon. He is expected to focus on Clinton's plan for the economy and jobs. Whether or not it matters or not, what do you want to hear him say, Joe?
He's here because it helps control the media markets on a day when Trump and Pence are in Wisconsin. It just means that, you know, the news stories tomorrow are going to have whatever bloviation Trump says, and then there'll be a part of a story will be about what Tim Kaine said, and it's just a way to manage the news.
Any thoughts on that, Margaret?
No, it just proves what I'm saying. This is a media-driven race, and these are we're responding to a population that wants sound bites. They don't want good, solid facts.
It's been that way since Jack Kennedy, though, Margaret.
Let's go to another caller. Anita in Portage is with us. Hello, Anita.
Good morning. I know you have all these issues, and it's very important, but one of the reasons I don't think Trump is going to play well in Wisconsin again in the general, as he did not in the... We're fiscal conservatives. I mean, we're tight with our money, and I think Walker talking about his discount cold shirts and his cold coupons plays well in Wisconsin. It didn't on the national stage, but Trump sitting in his gold-encrusted palace-like homes and saying, I'm rich, I'm really rich, I just think that does not play to our fiscal, conservatism in Wisconsin. I just think that is an overarching, bragging about your money doesn't sit well with us, and spending money opulently like that in such an ostentatious way. I think that alone...
Yeah, do you agree with that, Joe?
Yeah, I think there is kind of that German Scandinavian frugality that Wisconsinites are actually quite known for. We used to be known for Midwestern nice too. That's kind of left. Thank you, Scott Walker. But it was, what she says, I think, is largely true. And there's an issue that also ties to that that doesn't get nearly enough play, and that's Donald Trump's tax returns. My gosh, every president in the last 40-some years has released their tax returns. And this weak argument that I'm under audit is, I mean, that's just a cop-out. And the point is, while it doesn't play necessarily hugely, when you talk about why Wisconsin might not be a good Trump state, it's one of those things. I think she hit it right on the head about nobody wants these billionaire braggarts in Wisconsin. It's not our style.
What do you think about that, Margaret?
Well, I think Joe would agree with me that when people have been asked from the private sector to take an appointment to, we'll use Wisconsin, to state government, to some significant commission or committee or serve in some capacity, they have to file an ethics statement and an economic statement of where their money is, what they do, and all this. Many of the people who have been requested from the private sector to do this, when they find out they have to open up their own personal finances to the world, back off.
True.
They're very, very uncomfortable with that. And so we have a job maker, a very successful job maker, who is running on one side and has made his, whatever we can believe he has, his billions apparently, by creating jobs in the private sector and knowing how to negotiate and knowing how to develop his money into more success. On the other side, we've got a public sector servant all the years of her life who is very, very wealthy from giving speeches and seeing six-figure amounts for speeches that then have almost a quid pro quo. In terms of what she did as Secretary of State, that troubles me more than the billions that Donald talks about.
That you said a very good term, Margaret. Apparently,
well,
nobody actually knows what the guy is worth. I mean,
oh yeah, right.
I mean, and so he may be a multi-billionaire. There's a devastating television ad on right now. I think it's by Priorities USA, and it's about Donald Trump in his own words with David Letterman. And they talks about David Letterman, just, you know, straight face talks about, you know, Trump's bragging about, where all of his product lines and like, you know, the Trump ties from China, the Trump shirts from Bangladesh. Yeah, he's creating a lot of jobs. They're just not in America.
Do you think that that's going to resonate with voters, Joe, especially when it comes to Hillary Clinton's at least support at first of the TPP.
Well, and she was the Secretary of State for Barack Obama. And Margaret, I think, would agree with me on this. If you're a cabinet-level official in an administration, you'd better be supporting your governor or president's party line. And that's what she did. Now, has she changed? Possibly. Is it a fair criticism? Certainly. You can only go by what they say today. Now, in this odd case, both candidates for president are publicly against the TPP.
Let's talk about a couple new national polls out this week showing some good news for Hillary Clinton. A post-convention bounce, a reaction to some of the controversies from Donald Trump, a 15-point lead in a McClatchy survey over Donald Trump, which just had a 3-point lead last month. She has a 9-point lead in an NBC News Wall Street Journal poll. That's up from a 5-point lead last month. Even when you factor in third-party candidates, her lead doesn't really change. So, Joe, what do you make of that?
Well, and don't forget Fox is at 10.
Fox is at 10.
And CNN's at 9. I think that's about where it is right now. Does that mean where it's going to be in October? Who knows? I do think there's one part of the Trump campaign, if talking as kind of a political strategist, professional type, which I always pretend I'm loath to do. Reality that's going to really, I think, hurt Donald Trump at the end, beyond everything else, he has no ground game. There is no Trump game. The only thing they have is within the Republican Party itself, and that is scary dangerous if you're a down-ticket candidate when they don't have a get-out-the-vote strategy. Now, the Clinton campaign has the honed Obama whole database. And whether you like Barack Obama or not, he was the king of microdata. And it's one of the reasons he got elected twice is they understood voters. They understood how people vote, why they vote, and they knew how to get them out. Trump doesn't have that.
Are you worried about that, Margaret?
Well, I think if this is going to go as a normal 20th century campaign and election would go, that's true. I think there's nothing normal or 20th century about this campaign or this election. We did not have social media then. You can reach social people through social media faster than you can imagine. You both understand that, I know. And there are new ways to do things that will be utilized and have already been utilized. So I guess we're writing a whole new book this time. And I'd love to be the type that could sit down and analyze and spend my days writing books, because I think this election is going to actually demand books to be written.
Margaret, I think they're already being written.
Yeah.
that's true. But, you know, the assumption that the Clinton campaign isn't adept at social media, my God, between the Twitter feeds and Facebook and all those other things I get stuff from now, which 5 years ago I didn't know how to use any of, she's everywhere.
Do you think these double-digit leads are just temporary, Margaret, for the Hillary Clinton's leads?
Yes, because I don't think it's going to be a double-digit end up in November. I saw this morning early that the average of all the polls that are out there right now is a 7-point spread.
It's about 7.
And that would be what Trump's was, what his bump out of his campaign, his convention. It's just that, as Joe already said, within the last week, we not only had the convention bump, we had the couple bumps in the road for Trump, and that added to this, what we're seeing right now. Who knows what we're going to wake up to tomorrow morning or September or October or even the early days of November, what the world is going to be doing.
Margaret, I'm counting on Donald Trump to be part of that daily news cycle, because I know he will be.
We're going to take our break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about Wisconsin's primary. We have a primary on Tuesday. We'll talk about some of the races on the ballot and some other top stories in state politics. We'll welcome the story you want to talk about, too, at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. You're listening to The Week in Review. Our guests are Margaret Farrow and Joe Winicky. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Week in Review. We are talking with former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, former state lawmaker Margaret Farrow, and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and a former state senator, Joe Winicky. We are talking about some of the top stories in state and national politics. We'll focus in on the state now, and we'll welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. As mentioned, this coming Tuesday marks Wisconsin's primary election. The State Elections Commission predicts a turnout of 16%. On the ballot includes a Democratic state Senate race in Milwaukee between Senator Lena Taylor and Representative Mandela Barnes. Ron Kind is facing a primary challenge in the 3rd Congressional District for the first time in a decade. And Republicans are running in the 8th Congressional District after Reid Ribble decided to not seek re-election. And as we have already talked about, Paul Ryan is facing a primary challenger in the 1st Congressional District. Let's start, Margaret Farrell, with you. Is there a particular race or storyline here that you're most interested in?
Yes. I guess since I realized there was going to be a primary for Senator Lena Taylor in Milwaukee, I've been fascinated because I think it's been caused by Chris Larson, who I believe sees himself as a kingmaker and then didn't get his own crown because he was dethroned as majority leader in the Senate, or minority leader.
Minority, yeah.
And caught that, thanks, Joe. And I think he sees himself as getting this cadre of people who will owe him for what he helped them do. And he somehow talked Mandela Barnes into running against Lena. I've watched Lena. She's a very bright woman. She's an attorney. She's very effective representing her own people, in my opinion, from what I've been able to see. And also the thing I respect about her is what Joe opened the show with. She seems to know how to respect people across the aisle and how to work with them to get things done together. And I just think it would be really a tragedy if she did not continue to hold her seat. And if Chris Larson is given this feather in his cap, which I hope he won't, I think she'll be okay.
So Democrat Mandela Barnes is challenging Senator Lena Taylor for the Senate seat.
Of course, he's a state representative, so he represents a third of that district.
And he's giving up his seat to do it, so he must have assurances from Chris Larson that, oh, yeah, you're going to do this. Don't worry, Mandela.
I for one, never understood Chris Larson as a power broker. I was involved in Democratic politics, and the Democratic minority asked him to quit being their leader, which tells me he wasn't doing everything right. I just smell an upset here. I think Mandela may win.
Why? What is the problem with how Senator Taylor's been representing the area?
It's a stylistic thing. Mandela is an up and comer. He's a very hard worker. I have a lot of respect for him. I know Lena very well, and I still can't get over when Lena was the first vice chair of the party. I appointed her to that job. At a Democratic National Committee meeting in Chicago, she attacked Russ Feingold when he was the sitting senator in Wisconsin over Nevada and South Carolina caucus states versus primaries. And I've never quite forgiven her for that. And so I might be jaundiced. Margaret may be right. I don't have a dog to fight in this. So maybe she's friendly with Republicans, but she sure has occasionally attacked Democrats.
Well, how about the 3rd congressional district? Ron Kind, I guess, often considered more of a moderate, being challenged by a more progressive Democrat. What's happening there, Joe?
Well, Ron Kind is a hardworking, good member of Congress. He represents a district that is not overwhelmingly Democratic. It's more so than it was, thanks to the miracle of gerrymandering. But Ron Kind is against the party on one major issue, and that's free trade. Now, in Ron Kind's case, there are certain Democrats that will never forgive him for this. I do. And the reason is, for Ron Kind's whole career, he has believed in this. This is what he believes in. This isn't some position he takes for money or because whatever other reason. He does it because he believes truly it's the right thing to do for the American economy. I don't happen to agree with him on that. But I think the voters of the 3rd District know Ron Kind. I think generally they like him, and I think he'll get reelected.
How about, do you have anything to weigh in on that one, Margaret?
Nope.
How about the 8th? Is there a, with three Republicans vying in the primary to eventually, the winner of the Republican primary will face the lone Democrat in the race, Tom Nelson, the Outer Game County executive, who's also running for the 8th Congressional District race. Do you have some thoughts on the 8th Congressional District, Margaret?
No, I think it's going to be an interesting one. Two of them are you know, veterans, and talking about that, Mike Gallagher, I believe, is a Marine Corps veteran, and Terry McNulty was an Army, is in the Army or was in the Army Reserves. He also is a local government official. He's president of the village of Forestville and in southern Door County here, and he. And then we've got Frank Lissay, who's been in the legislature for a number of years, and has a name that goes longer in that area because he has a cousin, I believe it is, Al Lissay, who served for so long both in local and state government, was president of the Senate before his retirement. So you've got some of the Republican, how would I describe them, Joe, the Republican stalwarts who are backing Gallagher.
Yes.
Lissay's, I think, fighting a bit of an uphill battle within the party, but maybe not with the constituents. And I think Terry McNulty's got a long way to go.
I generally completely agree with what Margaret said. But I think that primary is largely going to be, it's in a weird way, I think it might be a test of Donald Trump's strength in the Republican Party, because I see Frank Lissay as the natural Donald Trump candidate, and I see Gallagher as the natural kind of establishment Walker, you know, the normal Republican Party. And my gut tells me that Gallagher will win, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I can see anything happen.
We had the candidates, Frank Lissay declined our invitation or was not available to join us this week, but both of the other Republican candidates, they're also not attending the Trump rally, and they weren't asking for or hoping for Trump's endorsement.
You are so kind, Joy, when you say he was unavailable.
Well, that's what we were told. How do you handicap the race when it comes to moving on against Tom Nelson, the Democrat, Joe?
I think Tom Nelson is one of the top 10 potential pickups in the country. Tom is maybe the hardest working Democrat I have ever met. And I met some really hard working Democrats in my life, but this guy's he works crazy hard. He's got a nice base out of the Fox Valley. The Fox Valley is becoming less and less Republican. It used to be reliably so. And I think he's going to have the resources. Both parties are going to have the resources. I think if Frank Lissay gets through that primary, that helps Tom Nelson as well.
Well, let's move on from some election news and talk a little bit about Governor Scott Walker saying he wants to continue the tuition freeze for the UW system schools for another budget cycle in an effort to keep higher education affordable. Margaret, you are on the Board of Regents, so this one probably hits close to home for you. Do you expect to see this freeze extended?
Well, we have to take him for his word, and my only concern is how did we end up here? We have a high tuition we have because it was raised over 10% during Governor Doyle's time, and at the same time as he raised the ability gave the regents the situation at that time to have to raise the tuition was because he took a ton of money out of the university. When Joe and I were in the legislature, the university was the number one budget item. First line on the budget, largest chunk of money went to the university, and we were paying about 40% of the cost of the university at that time. Now they're getting about 16% of their cost from the state government, and at the same time, we're still run, and this I would talk about when I was in the legislature on my side of the aisle. We are the most statutorily controlled university system in the country, which means everything the university wants to do is in state law, and they have to bow to the state legislature for everything, for buying paper just about. And I think that there is a need for flexibility, and I'm hoping the governor is going to be open to flexibility for things that are reasonably within control and not having to go to the department administration for every answer.
Before we get Joe to weigh in, state Democrats are saying, hey, they're all for a tuition freeze if the UW system funding is increased, saying you can't freeze tuition without raising UW system funding. Is that where you're coming from too, Joe?
Well, fine. Reality, well, first of all, we used to fund, I agree with Margaret, we used to fund the university at a much higher level. I would quibble about whether it was largest because K-12 funding has always been largest. But we have cut and cut and cut. And you can blame Jim Doyle all you want, but here's the truth. In the last 4 years or so, or six, however long Walker's, but 6 years I guess it is, not quite, it's 5.5. He has cut somewhere in the, what was it, a $350 million cut and then a $250 million cut, stole all the reserves and froze tuition. Where is this university system supposed to get its money if the state support isn't there and it's actually real cuts and they can't use any tuition money and we stole all their reserves? This university is on the verge of crumbling. And it's sad.
Well, I want to clarify, we didn't steal the reserves. We forced the universities and the comprehensive schools, the two research mm-hmm. institutions, UWM and Madison, yep. and then our other 11, they have to use their reserves that they had put aside for a building in the next 5 years or a repair of something in the next 4 years. All of those have now had to be put in the general operation of the
But Margaret, where's the money come from now?
I'm not disagreeing with you, Joe. I'm just clarifying that the state didn't end up with that pot of money. That they forced the university's hand in having to spend what they had set aside for something else.
Let me bring in a caller on this topic. Mark in Appleton, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. And Ms. Farrell is right. Jim Doyle did reverse spending. Spending in the UW colleges, the two-year institutions, was 60% of tuition. It's now about 20 to 30%. We have forcing us to spend down our reserves means that now we have no money and we have low enrollments and things are really in very, very bad shape and timing to maintain a curriculum. And the tuition freeze is just another cut if it's not funded.
Yes, it is.
And Mr. Weinecke is right that we are on the verge of crumbling. I think the public has not been made aware of it. I sense that President Cross has tried to hide just how bad things are, but the exodus of faculty throughout the system, things are very, very bad, and I don't know whether people, we have a great, great university, but it will not be great in another few years.
Let me get Margaret Farrell. We have very limited time. The university system is crumbling. What's your response to that?
Well, I think, first of all, the university system has a very good leader in President Cross. He can't make things happen as quickly or as directly as he would like to because I've characterized that he's in a rowboat in front of the Titanic trying to change the course of the Titanic. It's a very difficult situation. I think we have a huge responsibility to keep our buildings, much less our faculty and students, safe and really ready to confront the rest of the world. The only one we can look at and feel good about ourselves is Illinois, which is going down the tubes because their budget is such a disaster.
That makes me feel better.
Yeah, right. Never thought I'd say that. But we do have to get very serious about it. We have a great system, but we have to get we'll see some interesting meetings ahead is all I can say because I was at UWM yesterday looking at their buildings that were built in the 70s that need, if not replacement, need very, very serious mechanical HVAC, air handling, floors. You can't believe it. Yeah. You have to get serious.
Yeah. And Joe Winicky, you're in Vilas Hall on the UW-Madison campus.
The bathrooms are looking a little old, and I'm no fan of Ray Crosses. That's all I'm going to say.
We got to leave it there. Thank you both very much for being with us. Joe Winicky, former Democratic State Party chair, a former state senator, and Margaret Farrell, former Republican lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, and a former state lawmaker. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Bill Martins and Kai Brito for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.